This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Good afternoon, everyone. 1:06 p.m. on Friday, July 6th. I am Scott Moore from the Spartan Sports Network, filling in once again for Earl Robinson on Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. Our phone number is 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR, or you can call toll-free if you're outside of the greater Lansing area by dialing 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. We've got a good show planned for you today, if all goes well. We made some last-minute connections here that we are trying to catch up on. Michigan State University today announced their 2012 class for the MSU Athletic Hall of Fame, and some great names going into the Hall of Fame. You can visit the Hall of Fame anytime. It's right there at the Clarabelle Smith Academic Center on campus. But the new names that will be going in this September, football and track star Clint Jones, golfer Emily Bastel, who's now the head coach in golf at the University of Florida, basketball star Sean Respert is going in this year, basketball, softball, volleyball player Diane Spoolstra from the Grand Rapids area, actually grew up not too far from me in Kentwood, gymnastics coach George Zapula, great friend who's still here in the area in East Lansing, and linebacker Carl Banks is also a member of that staff, and we are reaching out to Carl right now. We've talked with him a little bit this morning. He is supposed to be calling us at any moment. We'll talk with Carl Banks, a former Spartan linebacker from back in the early 1980s, a little bit later on in the show. Also, later on in the show, at about 20 minutes until 1 o'clock, we're going to switch gears from football and from Halls of Fame and talk with the broadcaster for the Detroit Tigers, Dan Dickerson, who has good ties to Michigan State University here. Dan Dickerson taking a little bit of time out of his schedule later this afternoon to talk about the Tigers this season. And I really wanted to get more into I wanted to talk more with Dan Dickerson about himself and his journey to the position that he has now. You know, being a fellow play-by-play guy with just finishing up 15 years hosting Michigan State hockey coverage here in town, it always interests me to talk to different play-by-play guys and find out a little bit about their path, how they got involved in it, whether it was something that they just kind of fell into or whether it was something they had planned to get into, and a little bit about what it takes to prepare for a broadcast, certainly at that level. So we'll talk with Dan Dickerson a little bit later on in the program. We do have some open lines while we're waiting to hear from Carl Banks. So the phone number is 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. One of the topics that we didn't get a chance to get to yesterday because we had such a big show with talking hockey all day yesterday. The 4th of July is famous for fireworks. It's famous for Sousa marches and all that. It also has become famous for gorging oneself, speed eating, the Nathan's Hot Dog Challenge every year on Coney Island. And on Wednesday, Joey Chestnut opened his big yap and shoved 68 hot dogs down his throat in the course of a 10-minute span of time, equaling his world record. And that just begs the question to me, is competitive eating a sport? So if you want to weigh in on that one, give me a call right now at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-952-7870. Is competitive eating a sport, or should it be considered to be a sport? I'm not sure that it is. I It's a novelty to me. It's, I wouldn't say that it is sport. And I understand that the E in ESPN stands for entertainment. It's the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. As a matter of fact, just finished reading the book that was written a couple of years ago about ESPN called Those Guys Have All the Fun. Fascinating read. Big book. Takes a long time to get through it, but it is well worth the read if you're interested in sports broadcasting, just the history behind putting ESPN together and getting it to where it is today as the worldwide leader in sports. But So I do understand that the E stands for entertainment, but I'm not sure that competitive eating is really much more than just a novelty. And every year that it comes on, it invariably it winds up on the TV in my house, and I wind up paying some attention to it. I'm not enthralled by it. I don't hang on every word or every visual. Certainly very difficult to hang on every visual. It's not a pretty endeavor, a hot dog eating contest, that's for sure. But it's one of those things that it's kind of like, I hate to use the analogy, but kind of like a car crash on the highway where you don't want to look when you drive past, but your eyes are drawn to it. And that's kind of the same way with the hot dog contest every year on the 4th of July. I really don't want to watch it. I really don't want to pay attention to it, but it is there and it's right there in front of me. And it's just something about it. You just have to watch, even though your brain says, don't waste the time on it. So how do you feel about that? Give us a call at 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR, or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. Warm day out there. I hope that everyone who is listening is in some form of air conditioning. 98 degrees. At this time, a degree higher than it was yesterday during the show, headed towards a possible high of 102, record-breaking temperatures here in mid-Michigan. There are cooling centers all around, and if you are without power still, if you are listening on a battery-operated transistor radio, wondering what to do, find one of those cooling centers and get there and save yourself from this heat. Hopefully the break is around the corner. It's supposed to be a little bit warm Saturday and then only in the mid-80s on Sunday. So there's your break in the weather coming up. Some of the other things that I saw in the news this morning, kind of a tempest in a teapot, so to speak. A little bit of bad blood between Tony La Russa and Dusty Baker. One is a former National League manager, one is a current National League manager, and this all stems from the All-Star Game and the team assignments for the All-Star Game. What happened is Dusty Baker, the manager of the Cincinnati Reds, feels that his pitcher, Johnny Cueto, should be involved in the All-Star Game. And Tony La Russa is taking a very hardline look at the rule about Sunday pitchers in the All-Star Game. They passed a rule a few years ago, or I don't know if it's more of a gentleman's agreement or what, but you know, the All-Star Game is played on Tuesday. If a pitcher pitches for his team on Sunday, usually the next day a starting pitcher does absolutely nothing except maybe runs. Works on some conditioning, and then he starts doing a little light throwing after that, but certainly not anything like a full session on the side or anything like that until day three or four after their start. You got to save that arm for the next time they come around. So to pitch a start on Sunday and then turn around and throw in the All-Star Game on Tuesday, a lot of managers don't want their pitchers put in that position, kind of like what we were talking about yesterday with Justin Verlander. He'll be on full rest by the time the All-Star break comes around in the All-Star Game next week, Tuesday. But then if he goes three innings, you really can't pitch him again until 4 or 5 days later, and then that screws up a couple of pretty important series against the Baltimore Orioles and the California Angels for Jim Leland and the Tigers. So, you know, do you want Justin Verlander going three innings on Tuesday as the starter? And that's it's not official, but usually they give the All-Star game starter three innings, get him through the lineup at least once, unless he's getting knocked around, and then they'll get him out of there a little more quickly. On the other side, a guy who pitches on Sunday, you know, the agreement now is that they won't pitch any more than one inning. And Tony La Russa is taking a little bit of a hard line look at that and saying, well, Johnny Cueto is going to be pitching for the Cincinnati Reds on Sunday, so do I want him on the team? Well, I won't really be able to use him, so why include him in the team? And Dusty Baker, on the other hand, he's jumping back at Tony La Russa saying, this is an affront to my team, and that the only reason he's doing this is that a while back there was a brawl between the Reds and the Cardinals, and Johnny Cueto was involved in that. And so he's blackballing Johnny Cueto to make sure that that he doesn't get in the All-Star game, and Dusty Baker thinks this is a slap in Johnny Cueto's face. Where do you weigh in on that? 355-9527 is the number, or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. Interesting quotes, picking up some information off of ESPN.com here. Brandon Phillips also involved in this for Cincinnati. He was perceivedly snubbed by La Russa, and he was involved in that altercation back in 2010 as well. Phillips has remained quiet on it. Cueto spoke up. He said, I see that I have great numbers. I thought the way I pitched this year, I'd have a chance to go to the All-Star game. I don't know what happened. I don't. If I know manager of the All-Star game is upset with me, because I went out with one of his girlfriends. Well, I don't know where this is coming from, but Johnny Cueto flapping off at the mouth a little bit on this one. And then La Russa swung back. He said, if Dusty had been more interested in Cueto being on the team, then he wouldn't be pitching him on Sunday. He'd give him the wrist there and let him go in the All-Star game. Cueto probably would be on the team if he wasn't pitching on Sunday. The comments Dusty made clearly disappoint me and are attacking my integrity. The All-Star experience is too important to let anything stand in the way of a decision like that. No way am I going to penalize anybody for any kind of past history. The fact is that Cueto is going to be pitching on Sunday. Some other day, he's probably on the team. And Tony La Russa really has nothing to lose out of this whole thing because, you know, he's not managing anywhere in baseball, so nobody's going to have anything to say when they come to his ballpark or when his team comes to visit their team, because Tony La Russa isn't there anymore. He retired at the end of last season. He's got nothing to lose. So where do you want to, you know, how do you weigh in on that? The phone number is 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR, or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. The time now is 1:20 on Friday afternoon, and the temperature, folks, we've done it. Triple digits. We have just hit 100 on our way to 102. And if that, if I'm not mistaken, that ties an all-time high for this date that was set originally in the 1800s and then again in the 1930s. So, yeah, it's warm out there. Stay safe, everyone. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with more sports talk right after this on AM 870.
At long last, the Higgs. Maybe. I'm Ira Flatow. On Science Friday, Sean Carroll explains why the discovery is so important. Plus, summer science, how sunscreen works, the chemistry of the barbecue, mayo myth-busting, and an ode to the pickle. That's all on Science Friday from NPR.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 right here on AM 870.
Our heat wave continues in mid-Michigan at least through Saturday evening. Sunny skies today with a high around 100, a possible heat index of 108. Mostly clear tonight, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, a low in the mid-70s. A mostly sunny weekend both Saturday and Sunday, mid-90s for the high Saturday and lower 80s on Sunday.
Welcome back. Scott Moore in for Earl Robinson on Sports Talk today. The phone number 355-9527, or you can call toll-free 877-952-7870. We are still hoping to catch up with Spartan alum Carl Banks, former member of the New York Giants, won a couple of World Championship rings with the New York Giants in a 12-year pro football career. He has just been announced today as one of the newest inductees into the MSU Athletic Hall of Fame. Those induction ceremonies will take part in September. And if I have the information correctly, the induction ceremony is on Thursday night, September 20th. You want to set your, mark your calendars for that. It's a great class again. Clint Jones, who played both football and track here at Michigan State. Emily Bastel from the golf team. Basketball star Sean Respert is going to be inducted that night. Three sports star Diane Spoelstra, who played basketball, softball, and volleyball at Michigan State University. Gymnastics coach George Zappula and linebacker Carl Banks all voted into the MSU Athletic Hall of Fame. The induction ceremony, as I mentioned, on Thursday, September 20th, they changed the way that they did this a couple of years back, where they do the induction ceremony along with when they hand out the varsity jackets, the letter jackets to the athletes who had earned a varsity letter the previous year. That's a really nice ceremony. So you get all that lumped in together in one ceremony, and then the next night is the Varsity S Club Awards on Friday night, and then you go from there to the football game that next Saturday, which would be Saturday, September 22nd, a home game against Eastern Michigan University, and all of the recipients or all of the inductees into the Athletic Hall of Fame will be recognized during the football game at Spartan Stadium. Wanted to give you a little bit of information about the rest of the members of that class going into the Spartan Athletics Hall of Fame. In addition to Carl Banks, who was a four-year contributor on the Michigan State football team, a four-year letter winner, and also a three-time first-team All-Big Ten his sophomore, junior, and senior years. And these were for Michigan State teams that were not exactly, lighten up the world with their records at that time. Carl Banks came in as a freshman in 1980, the first class with Frank Muddy Waters as the head coach. They went 3-8 overall that season, 2-6 in the Big Ten for a ninth place finish. In 1981, the team was just a game under 500, so making some progress there. 5-6, 4-5 in the Big Ten, tied for sixth place that season with wins over Wisconsin, Indiana, Northwestern, and Minnesota. Junior year, the team took another step back, went 2-9, 2-7 in the Big Ten, with the only wins coming over Indiana and Minnesota. And then his senior year, George Perlis came in and took over the team. His first year, everyone who was around the Lansing area at that time remembers all the bumper stickers, "Let George do it." Well, George Perlis came in and really kind of changed the attitude, changed the atmosphere around here. The team only went 4-6-1 in his first season, 2-6-1 in the Big Ten. Opened up with a couple of wins over Colorado and Notre Dame, and then again the only other wins were Minnesota and Northwestern that season. But the attitude had changed, and within 5 years, George Perlis had him a Big Ten championship and a game in the Rose Bowl. So Carl Banks was here for the start of that George Perlis era. And then, as I mentioned, went on to win the Super Bowl twice with the New York Giants, part of a 12-year career that included stops in Washington, D.C. and in Cleveland as well. He was inducted into the Ring of Honor for the New York Giants last year. Other members of this team, Emily Bastel, mentioned she is now the head golf coach at the University of Florida. During her 4 years, she sparked the Spartans to new heights and helped spark a remarkable run that placed Michigan State among the top women's golf programs in the nation. She was the first female recipient of the George Alderton Award at Michigan State University, noticing excellence on both the athletic field and in the classroom. One of only three Spartans to earn all Big Ten honors four times. She was the Freshman of the Year in 99, claimed Big Ten medalist honors in 2000, and was the first Spartan named to the Big Ten Golfer of the Year in the year 2002. Clint Jones, big name in history in football, played for Duffy Doherty from 64 through 66, made his presence known as a sophomore in 64, finishing second on the team in rushing with 350 yards and four touchdowns. As a junior, he was named first team All Big Ten. Ran for 787 yards and 10 touchdowns that season. Three 100-yard rushing games in 1965, including a season-best 132 yards on 16 carries in a 32-7 win over Ohio State. And then he also distinguished himself as a hurdler on the track in the spring. So Clint Jones, very deserving of his inclusion in the Hall of Fame. Sean Respert, for you younger people who might not remember Clint Jones or even Carl Banks participating in football for Michigan State. Sean Respert played basketball from 91 through 95, Michigan State's all-time leading scorer, two-time All-America, 1995 Big Ten Player of the Year. And I can remember, because that was when I was just first starting out with the Spartan Sports Network and hosting the basketball coverage. So I'd go to practice and talk to these guys after practice. Practice would wind up. Judd would get them all into a huddle in the middle of the floor, have some final words for them, and then the players would come over to the sideline for the media to talk to them. Sean Respert was always one of the last one to the sideline because he would be out shooting from around the three-point line. He'd have an assistant coach firing the ball back to him. It'd be a couple of steps to the right, take the shot, couple of steps to the left, take the shot. That guy was dead on every single time that he took a shot in practice. It was almost like practicing a free throw for anybody else. And this was a shot with movement, trying to find his shot from the perimeter. He was just amazing in practice and after practice like that. The amount of work that Sean Respert put in was just amazing. Diane Spoelstra, part of the team, three sports star from 75 through 78. From Kentwood, Michigan, she played women's basketball and softball and volleyball while she was here. One of only two women to compete in three different sports, joining Shirley Cook, who did it between 1955 and 58 when she played field hockey, basketball, and track at Michigan State. And then you've also got George Zappula, who is just a wonderful man. I had a chance to strike up a friendship with Coach Zappula years ago when I was working on a morning show here in town with my friend Chris Holman. And George Zappula was a regular listener, and he'd call in all the time. I always had a great time talking with him. And then I had a daughter who competed in gymnastics at East Lansing High School. And wouldn't you know, George was right there helping out with the team and judging in their meets. So George Zappula, a longtime men's gymnastics coach at Michigan State, led the Spartans to the NCAA championship back in 1958 and a Big Ten title in 1968. 41 years that George Zappula was the men's gymnastics coach at Michigan State University. And he is definitely still going strong. So congratulations to everyone who was named to the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame earlier today. And again, the induction ceremony will be September 20th as part of the Celebrate 2012 weekend, which includes the third annual Varsity Letter Jacket presentation and Hall of Fame induction ceremony on Thursday, September 20th, announcement of the Varsity S Club Award winners on Friday the 21st, and then, of course, on Saturday the 22nd, special recognition in the Hall of Fame game or of the Hall of Famers during the Michigan State Eastern Michigan football game in Spartan Stadium. Kickoff time has not yet been established for that game. Our phone number here at WKAR is 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. Or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. We do have some activities, some things that have happened during the day already today. At Wimbledon, it's Men's Day at the All England Racquet Club. They have played one men's semifinal so far. Roger Federer was the winner in that one as he took down Novak Djokovic in four sets. He is waiting to see who he will face in the championship game on Sunday. It will be either Tsongas or Andy Murray, and I saw someone had tweeted earlier today that if Andy Murray, who is a Brit, I believe he's from Scotland, if he actually makes it through to the championship game, England will explode. They haven't had an English player in the championship at Wimbledon in years and years and years. But last I saw, he had already won the first set of his match and was on his way to a matchup with Roger Federer in the championship game on Sunday. This will be the record eighth Wimbledon final for Federer on Sunday. The score of his match against Djokovic, it was 6-3, 3-6, 6-4, 6-3. So after that second set, really not a whole lot of challenge from Djokovic. These two had met 10 times coming into this meeting, and each one had won 5 times. So it was very interesting, an interesting matchup there. Also, one item that caught my eye today on the AP wire, a fire at the arena in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Officials are trying to determine the cause of the fire that damaged the roof of the historic Central Pennsylvania Arena. Now, Hershey, Pennsylvania Arena might not ring a bell with a lot of people. That was the site of the game that Will Chamberlain scored an NBA record 100 points in a single game 50 years ago. It was and a lot of people say, well, he played for Philadelphia. They played that game in Hershey, Pennsylvania. So they say the structure is still sound. The blaze broke out about 1 p.m. Thursday at the 75-year-old Hershey Park Arena in Derry Township, a facility owned by Hershey Entertainment and Resorts. No injuries in it. They say the building is still structurally sound. The damage was in the roof, so they'll be able to repair that, and the arena will still go on and stand. So that is good news. But those are some of the things that are going on. Another interesting bit of information that came out today. If we go back to Wimbledon for just a second, we talked about the women's draw yesterday in the championship game between, and I have to slow down in order to get the name incorrectly, Agnieszka Radwanska. I'm getting there. I'm getting there on the pronunciation. Agnieszka Radwanska taking on Serena Williams. I'm a whole lot better at Serena Williams than I am at Radwanska. But they will play tomorrow, and Radwanska may not be at 100%. She had to skip a press conference earlier today because she's contracted an upper respiratory infection, and it has affected her throat. And basically, she's got laryngitis. She says she's fine when she's on the court. She's playing okay. It's not affecting her breathing or anything like that. It's just gotten into her throat, so she didn't go through with the press conference today. But she is not 100%. Other news, Olympic news here on the wire. France got some good news. The San Antonio Spurs doctors have given Tony Parker medical clearance to play for his country in the London Olympics. The star point guard's participation was in doubt after he suffered a scratch cornea during a bit of an altercation at a nightclub in New York last month. But Tony Parker will be good and ready to go. And how about Jeremy Lin? Jeremy Lin, who no one outside of Harvard alums had heard of at the start of last basketball season, is like the 12th man on the bench for the New York Knicks, and he gets pressed into service because of injuries and lights the place up. And now Jeremy Lin has worked that into an offer sheet from the Houston Rockets, where a four-year deal that the New York Knicks have the right to match. The New York Knicks, however, have signed Jason Kidd, who's a pretty darn good point guard in his own right, even though he's a little on the higher end of the age scale. So Jason Kidd is now a New York Knick. That kind of says to me that New York probably is not as interested in re-signing Jeremy Lin. Maybe they're thinking bit of a flash in the pan there on Jeremy Lin. But the Houston Rockets are willing to take a chance on the fact that Jeremy Lin can work a little bit of magic for them last year. So he has his offer sheet and may wind up wearing the red and white instead of the blue and orange of the New York Knickerbockers. It is now 1:37 on Friday, July 6th, and the temperature, drum roll please, up to 101 now. We have climbed 4 degrees just since I got here. Maybe it's all the hot air coming out of this room. But 101 on the way to 102. And if that 101 is official, this is according to a website that's posting updates on the temperatures. Feels like 109, it says. But it is 101 here in the capital city. That would be an all-time high for certainly this date, and that might be an all-time high for the entire month of July. So this is history-making stuff right here, folks, in early July, and hopefully all are safe out there. Staying as cool as possible in these temperatures. The rain's supposed to come through tomorrow morning, and we may still get up a little bit high tomorrow afternoon, but then the moderation comes in. We're looking at only mid-80s, which is still pretty stinking hot, but certainly it'll feel like a cool wave. We'll be wanting to put the winter jackets on after hitting 101 here this afternoon. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will check in with Dan Dickerson, the voice of the Detroit Tigers, when we return with more of Sports Talk right here on AM 870.
What are you reading this summer? I'm Ira Flatow. Join us for our Science Friday Book Club. We're reading Silent Spring, published 50 years ago. What meaning does it have today? Plus, why scientists have come to blows, literally, over who gets the glory for a discovery. It's all on Science Friday from NPR.
That is Science Friday, coming up right after this at 3 p.m. on AM 870 WKAR.
Sunny skies the rest of this afternoon, a high around 100 with a heat index reading possibly around 108. Then for tonight, mostly clear, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, a low in the mid-70s. A mostly sunny weekend, highs in the mid-90s on Saturday, highs on Sunday in the lower 80s. I'm Kevin Lavery.
Thank you very much, Kevin. As we mentioned, the temperature has just topped 101 here in the capital city. And we are on Sports Talk 870, the phone number 355-9527, or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. And we will be checking in with Dan Dickerson in just a moment here. But first, we've got some other business to attend to, and they're letting me know what our other business will be in just a second. We do appreciate you taking a little bit of time to spend with us here on the day after the 4th of July. And we'll head quickly to the phones and say hi to John from Holt. John, what's on your mind today?
This year.
Oh, John, there you are. There you are. Now I can hear you. What's on your mind?
My question is, how is the Spartan hockey team going to be this year?
How is the Spartan hockey team going to be this year? It's going to be an interesting year because last year they had the advantage of having some experience on their side, but 10 players have either graduated or moved on, and so there is going to be a lot of youth on this team. So that might be a downside. It's some pretty talented youth, though. So I think they're still going to be a middle-of-the-pack type team. I think they're going to be challenging for home ice in the first round of the playoffs. And if they get a couple of breaks along the way, they may even be able to get that first round bye. This is a work in progress. And I know that Tom Anastas and the coaching staff at Michigan State are pretty excited about the prospects going on in the future. But this year may be a little bit tough for the Spartans.
Tom's been a great find for the Spartans. He's done a tremendous job in this short time at Michigan State so far, and I look for only brighter things in the future for the program.
He's done
a wonderful job recruiting too, as you probably would agree with me.
I would agree wholeheartedly on that. When you look at the fact that the Michigan State Spartans had four incoming players taken in the NHL draft. That's the first time since the class that netted a national championship in 2007. So things are looking up on the recruiting trail for Michigan State.
I tell you what, Michigan State's lucky to have the finest athletic director in the land, Mark Collis, man. With him leading the ship, I don't see how we can go wrong as Spartan fans.
You know, it is amazing the strides that have been made, not only in facilities under Mark Hollis and Greg Iani, the deputy athletic director there.
Yeah, don't forget about Greg. He's done great, too.
Greg does a fantastic job.
Absolutely.
And with the coaching hires that Mark Hollis has brought in, these are all good things, and things are going to go well for Michigan State in the future.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You have a great weekend. Try to stay cool, man.
Cool. All right. I'm trying, John. Thanks for the call, man.
Thank you.
That's John from Holt. Thanks for checking in, John. We've got 355-WKAR. That's 355-9527 is the number here. Or you can call toll-free 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. We are efforting to get Dan Dickerson on the phone line here to check in with him about the Detroit Tigers. Tigers, what a great game for the Detroit Tigers yesterday, as they had a great comeback at Comerica Park, a great eighth inning, and I understand that Dan is with us on the phone now. Dan Dickerson from the Detroit Tigers. That eighth inning yesterday, I would imagine, I know I felt that was what I expected to see when I first heard that the Tigers were going to have both Cabrera and Fielder batting back-to-back this season.
Oh, I agree. I mean, that's exactly the kind of offense I think we thought we were going to see. We haven't seen it probably as much as Tiger fans want in the first half, but I think there are some signs that it's coming around, but that was an awful lot of fun to watch that one inning.
I sure it was. And now Prince Fielder, 13 home runs this season, the league leaders up in the high 20s. Do you feel, I've kind of had the feeling that maybe it's taken him a little bit of time to learn American League pitchers.
I think there's a lot to that. I really do. And people might say, well, he should have adjusted by now. You know what? It could take the better part of the year. I mean, it might not. The thing that I talked to them earlier in the year, or I think we were in Boston at the time, just about hitting home runs. Jim told me last year when he was approaching 600, said they're a funny thing. He said, you can't just go out and try to hit home runs. Because when you do, that's when you usually don't.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And Prince Fielder said he just concentrates on hitting the ball hard. And he said that's when you hit home runs. If you square up a ball on a consistent basis and hit a ball hard somewhere, you're going to hit a home run. And I think that's what we have seen from Prince Fielder. Pretty consistent contact all year long. Now, it's been a lot of singles. It's been some doubles. But I think the hard contact is a good sign. I won't be surprised to see him, you know, still get to 30 home runs.
Well, that swing he put on in the eighth inning, I don't know that I've ever seen a player swing harder than that one. That one had home run all over it.
No, I mean, he can hit. He can flat out hit. He's not just a home run hitter. Like Cabrera is not just a home run hitter. You know, they can spread the ball around. They can get a big hit in a key situation. It's not all or nothing. And there's a lot of value to guys who are something more than just all or nothing. I mean, Adam Dunn's terrific, but it is kind of all or nothing.
Right.
Prince Fielder hits 28, but he hits 300, which is basically where he is right now, and drives in over 100 runs. I think you're going to be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I got a chance to see Prince when I was with the Lansing Lugnuts back in the early part of the 2000s when he was with Beloit. And you could tell back then this kid had major league potential all over him.
Yeah, the bat is so quick. And he's got an idea, you know? He's really got an idea.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on, talk a little bit about the Tigers, but I also wanted to talk about your journey from where you started to where you are now. How did you get your start as a broadcaster?
Going back a ways, you know, I started in Grand Rapids, and I always think it's kind of a miracle that I ever got a job based on the tape that I was sending out. I mean, really, it was not a very good tape. And I remember exactly how I recorded it with a condenser mic. Now, this is 1980 we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Condenser mics were brand new to the portable radio cassette industry. And, you know, so it wasn't a very good tape, but that's what I sent out. It was a miracle I got a job. But I was in Grand Rapids for 8 years. I had some terrific people who worked with me in Grand Rapids on my delivery. I mean, my first boss just, you know, teaching you basics about how you come through the radio, which is kind of a funny thing. You don't just talk louder, but you have to enunciate and breathe a certain way. And, you know, this guy was great. Jack Hoppus was his name. Then John Bryan, Grand Rapids, helped me in my delivery, which is kind of a formal, stiff delivery covering the news. He wanted me to loosen up a little bit and helped, I think, develop a style for me. And he did a lot of work with me over 7 years there. So that was in the 80s, and then moved to Detroit in the late 80s. And, you know, I was at WWJ Radio doing – I was always in news, but I always wanted to be in sports. So I just kept trying to work my way into sports, and I did a little bit of news and sports at WWJ. And probably my biggest break was to, you know, get to WJR 95, so 15 years into my career as a full-time sports guy, and then the chance to do play-by-play when I was at WJR.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you said you wanted to get into sports, but was play-by-play always in the cards for you? Is that something you had a dream
of? Oh, yeah. I love play-by-play. I mean, I did it at Ohio Wesleyan. It was great. It was a 10-watt radio station, and if you showed up, you got a job. And they needed people to fill in, and nobody was doing football, so I did football games. They were terrible, and nobody did basketball, so I did the basketball games for a couple of years, and that was a fun, exciting team. And, I mean, I got hooked when I was in college doing play-by-play. I absolutely loved it. So, you know, I did a little bit in Grand Rapids, but not much in my 8 years there, just a little bit of high school football and basketball. And then I had, you know, what I wanted to do, and I kept practicing. I would go to games and just practice my play-by-play, and I would go to a Lions exhibition game at the Silverdome and pretend I was on the air, and Ray Bentley, who now does games nationally, would come over with me. He was trying to get into the business, and we would actually call a game together, not on the air, but into a tape recorder, and, you know, we were trying to make a tape to send out to people. And so I would always practice. I'd go down to Tiger Stadium and practice, and I gave my boss at WJR a practice tape when they needed somebody in 95 to do Michigan football fill-in for when Frank Beckman was still doing Tigers baseball and somebody did the game in September. So it was a practice tape that I gave my boss. I said, I just want you to know this is what I want to do. And when the need arose to have somebody fill in kind of for the fill-in, on an emergency basis. That's when Chuck said, you know, Dan's ready. Let's let him do it. They wanted Chuck to do it. And that was probably my biggest break in my career. Chuck said, you know, I've heard Dan's safe. He's ready. Let's let him have the shot. I did three Michigan football games, 95. And then I think that's the biggest break, because all of a sudden, instead of a guy who used to do high school sports in Grand Rapids, I'm now doing a major sport in a major market. And I think that changed everything.
Yeah, you've got a little bit of cachet, so to speak, to your name now.
Yeah.
that you've done that. You got the chance before getting the full-time Tigers job to work for a couple of seasons with one of, if not the best ever, in Ernie Harwell. What kind of advice did you get from Ernie?
I always think there are a couple of moments that always stick with me I think my first day on the job, you know, I'd never done baseball play-by-play before, except on a practice basis. And my first day down at spring training in 2000, I remember walking on the backfields of Joker Marchant in the Lakeland Complex, and I ran into Ernie, and I talked about my trepidation a little bit. You know, what I hold up over 162 games, yeah. And I still like baseball after 162 games. Could I do this? I mean, truly, all I'd ever done was practice. I'd never done the minor league. And he said, just remember, get what's in front of you right. Does the listener have a clear understanding of what just happened? Mm-hmm. And then everything else is style. And I thought that was a good way of putting it, because I thought, okay, I can do that. I can, you know, it's something you work at constantly, but I can hopefully paint that picture. And then, you know, you just kind of fill in the rest with whatever it is you prepared before the game and whatever you want to talk about. And then the other piece of advice that always stuck with me, and this was, I think this was later that same year, because that was the year they had made the big trade for Juan Gonzalez. They'd opened the new ballpark, and that team was supposed to be good in 2000. They started 9-23, and I was down in the dumps. This was my team. I grew up watching the Tigers, and I just thought this is terrible. We're 32 games in, and this season's over. So I asked him, I said, how do you keep calling a game, you know, when everybody, you know, it's not a good team? How do you keep up the enthusiasm? Or I can't remember exactly how I phrased it, but I said, basically, how do you do this?
Yeah.
And he said, just remember, he said, you know, somebody's always listening. It may be more when they're winning, less when they're losing. But give them a reason to listen to that game. You might see a great performance between two bad teams. You might see a great individual performance, you might see something you've never seen before. And I just, you know, and it reminded me why I love baseball. I mean, just a very simple piece of advice. And yet when you just take it on a game-by-game basis, instead of thinking, God, we now have to go, let's see, you know, 81 and whatever to get to 90. No, take it game-by-game. Why is this game interesting? And then we did, you know, the number of times that came true in the next several years and the losing got worse and worse was amazing. I mean, you would see a good game between two bad teams, maybe, or you would see a great individual performance. You would see something you've never seen before. Heck, he saw things he'd never seen before that year. Uh-huh. He'd been calling games for 50 years. So,
right.
So that was a great piece of advice that has served me very, very well. And I think of it often, and I think of him often.
You know, one of the things that always blows me away when I talk to people about, you know, being a play-by-play guy is the number of people who think you show up a half hour before the game starts and you start talking. What is an average day for you during the season like?
Well, like today I got up early just to get working on Kansas City. For the start of a series, I don't know, depending on, I mean, ideally, it's probably 5 or 6 hours before you go to the ballpark just to, you know, I do a page. Everybody does it different. Everybody's got their own system. I do a page for every player on the opposing team. So you want to update that page of their current stats and anything that might stand out. We haven't seen KC since early May.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of time consuming. It takes a little bit of time. Then you try to get some clips from the last week or maybe 2 weeks on Kansas City. Just kind of make sure you're on top of what might be happening with individuals or the team as a whole. And then I try to just do a page, like I'm finishing up my page right now, just like I call it series notes, just a little refresher for me, really, so I can have it fresh in my mind. How has this series gone this year? How has it gone in recent years? like what stands out about this series, it's been whenever the Tigers have won the last 3 years, going back to 2010, it's been, you know, close, low-scoring games. The Tigers have not scored many runs against Kansas City, even though Kansas City has not had great pitching in that time. So just things like that that you kind of look at, and you know, where's Kansas City statistically? Where do they rank in the league, runs and pitching? So just, you know, I just take the approach that I like to get as much information as I can, and then hopefully you can just put it all to the side or most of it to the side, and it's kind of fresh in your brain. And then when the game gets going, you kind of pick out little things here and there that you remember or that stick out, or maybe you refer to your notes. But that's just my approach. Everybody does it a little bit differently, but it's to get ready for a series, it's a good 4 to 6 hours. And then once you're at the ballpark, I get there about 2:45 today, and then you write down your lineups, you talk to the manager, you talk to players, maybe go to the other locker room, and it's amazing how it always seems like there's never enough time, but eventually the game's going to start, so you gotta put the pen down at some point. It's fun, though. To me, this is what I'd be doing in my spare time. So it's kind of time-consuming, but I enjoy every bit of it.
It's one of those things where it's better than having a job, isn't it?
I believe that.
You had a situation earlier this week where you had the rain delay on the 4th of July that pushed the start time back to 9:30 or even later, and then a day game the next day. We all hear about playing a day game after a night game, but a day game after a night game that goes that late, what, did you just find a couch somewhere at the stadium and stay there overnight?
It sounds tempting, but no, it's always better to just come home. So I just came home, and it was just a quick turnaround. As I always say to the people at the ballpark, when you walk out the door, sleep fast. I'll see you in the morning.
Do you have a favorite place other than Comerica Park to call a game?
Oh, yeah. There are a number of them. I think Target Field is a real gem, and I think of the places, you know, that we go to three times, all the Central Division sites. And that's why Target Field has become just, to me, one of the really fun spots to go to. They did everything right. It's not just that you're out of the Metrodome, but it's a great ballpark. And so that's become right at the top of my list. Pittsburgh is fun. We've been there the last 2 years now. It's a gorgeous ballpark. I'm not sure there's one better.
Well, that's a great view. That's a great view from the press box, too.
Yeah, it's a great view. They did everything right in Pittsburgh. And I would encourage anybody who just likes to travel and see a new ballpark. I mean, that's 5 hours away from Detroit, and it's worth a drive. To me, that's a destination ballpark, and I think that's kind of fun. Seattle is a great ballpark. I like Cleveland's ballpark. It's a little different, but I like it a lot. I like going there. It's kind of everything. It's the setting. It's the fans. It's the people who work at the ballpark, and Cleveland's just known for just terrific atmosphere at the ballpark. So that's a really nice place to go. Kauffman Stadium is beautiful. It's kind of one of those rare 70s ballparks that has really stood the test of time in terms of how they've kept it up and the setting and the waterfall. It's a really nice place to watch a game. So there are a lot of good ones. But those are probably all the ones that I think of right off the top of my head that I really enjoy going to.
If you weren't in broadcasting, we've only got a couple of seconds left. If you weren't in broadcasting, what'd you be doing?
I have no idea. I have no idea. You know, I've always liked politics, but I think that's I'm not sure I'm cut out for the rough and tumble of politics. I like the idea of making policy. My dad was involved in politics for a long time, and I've always been interested in it. But I can't. I think running for office is not an easy thing to do.
No.
I admire anybody who can do it. But I'm interested in current events and making changes that to help people's lives, make people's lives better. And I just think that would be an interesting sideline. But again, I think right now that's not an easy thing to do. I'm just glad I got hooked in radio early, and that's all I've ever known.
Well, Dan, I thank you very, very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule for us today, and I hope to see you at a hockey game sometime coming up before too long.
All right. Enjoyed our conversation. Thank you.
All right. That's Dan Dickerson from the Detroit Tigers. Jerry, we know you were holding. We didn't get a chance to get to you. Hopefully, we'll get you in here another day. I've had a great time these last 2 days filling in here. Thanks to Alex Sharg for helping out. Thanks to Carl Banks and Dave Dickerson for joining me on the air today. And I do want to tell you that you've been listening to radio station WKAR East Lansing. We come your way every Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 on AM 870. Come back and join us next week. Have a great time on your WKAR AM 870.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.